Welcome. Good Friday. Welcome to the Beauty Files. I'm Juanita. I'm so glad you can join us today. Happy Friday. Yeah, it's Friday. And where I am, it's really good weather. It's like in the 50s or 60s. For us, that's good. We're in the Northeast. So for us, it's good. I'm sure Don and his crew in California are laughing at us because their weather, it's a lot better than ours. But we appreciate the warm weather, so welcome to the Beauty Files. I'm Juanita. I am so glad you can join us today. Okay, so as promised, we have part two of the Help Me Plan My Wedding series. Now, we have three more experts in their field that's going to help us get her done. So we're going to get her done for the big day. And a lot of you still need help because you still think that you know what you're doing to plan your wedding. But we got some other things that you probably didn't even think about when you were planning your wedding, and that's where these guys come in. So our first guest is Anya Winica. She is from theknot.com, K-N-O-T.com. What a fabulous website, and she's going to give us oodles and oodles of great tips from the site. And also later in the show, we're going to have David Cooper from Jeff Cooper Designs, who's going to give us more information on picking out that perfect bauble, you know, that big bling, the one that when you come in, you get engaged and you show your girlfriend, you say, could you pass me the sugar? And you know, you kind of bling the ring. Well, David Cooper Designs are fabulous, and I can't wait to ask him some questions about how a girl or guy, what am I saying about a girl? A guy should pick out the perfect ring. Well, it's usually the girl that tells the guy what to get. We just pretend like we don't know. And Kelly Sullivan from Nivica Med Spa. Now, a lot of us think that we can do certain procedures prior to getting married. Well, Kelly's going to break it down and let us know what exactly we can get done 2 days in advance, 2 weeks in advance, 6 weeks prior to your wedding. You know, and I'm talking like Botox, certain injectables, the liposuction, anything that you think was going to make you look fabulous on your wedding day. And Kelly's going to give us that information and let you know your timeline as far as when you can get those done. So without further ado, Anya from theknot.com, welcome to the Beauty Files.
Thank you.
I am so, so pleased to have you on the show. And I have, your website is amazing. It has any and everything a bride could even possibly ask for and more.
Well, good. That's what we're hoping for.
it's just a wealth of information. And, you know, I've got so much stuff, and I hope I have enough time with you to get all this in. The first thing I'm going to do, ask you, I'm just going to throw out some questions for you and some questions that people have tweeted to me as well. How do you prevent wedding insanity? What would you suggest for that? Because a lot of people will get insane during that time of the moment.
You know, one of those things you really can't get around is being a little insane when you're planning your wedding. It just happens. I mean, you're spending a lot of money on one day. But, you know, you got to keep it in perspective, and that's really what it comes down to, is just remembering at the end of the day what's happening the day after your wedding. When you wake up, you're married, you know. You have to keep the rest of your life in kind of perspective and understand that, you know, if you can't get the right linen, or if it doesn't quite look as the way you thought it would look, or someone's telling you something that you just can't handle, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Because at the end of the day, you know, you're planning this beautiful wedding because you're getting married.
but do you think that we put more stress on, do I really want to dig into this little hole? Do we put more stress on the fact that we want everything to look perfect as opposed to why we are really there because we are trying to get married? I mean,
yeah.
That's a personal question.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a really valid question. I mean, we want beautiful photos. We want our, you know, and we want it to look, you know, a certain way in our heads because perhaps we've been dreaming about it since we were little. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think one of the things to think about is you're creating an experience and surrounding this thing that you're doing, which is your wedding. And so maybe focusing in on those, you know, aspects like the ceremony, like what music is going to be playing when you know, are before you exchange your vows, those kinds of things that are super meaningful and really make it you know, highlight the parts that are the most important, which is the ceremony. So yes, like it's really fun to get wrapped up in all the pretty details. And but yeah, I think I agree. You have to put it, keep it in perspective, and remember, you know, this is a ceremony, and it's a celebration of a new union.
Now, you know, I read something on your site. It was called Sticky Subjects, and it was called Nuptial Nightmares. I'm dying here. They were so funny. And one that I really like, it was, here we go. When I got down the aisle, our officiant had laryngitis and offered to do the ceremony in sign language. Yeah. I mean, does it get any better? What are you doing?
We started that series also in our magazine, in the Knot magazine, because brides were writing to us constantly and talking on the message boards about how they kept having all these nightmares about their weddings. Like, I was walking down the aisle and my wedding dress was made out of toilet paper. Like, really hilarious things. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And here's another great one. This is the funniest thing. This one had me laughing so hard. It said, one of our dogs ate the wedding cake. So we had to go to 7-Eleven and feed the guests boxed cake and cookies instead. Yeah. I can see my dog doing that. I love it. Yeah. I can see my dog, my boyfriend's dog. I can see everybody's dog doing that. What do you do in that situation? If something happened that bad, even a scenario, I'll think, what if somebody basically they came in, the dress they thought fit a week ago, they put it on, and for some odd reason, those chicken fingers were too much that you just gained 5 pounds, and the dress doesn't fit. What do you tell people?
Well, it depends on how – obviously, it's all case by case, and it depends on how far out and how the dress is constructed. A lot of dresses that have and if you have enough room to do it, but if even in the most dire circumstances where you really aren't able to zip that up, you can take it to a seamstress and they would have to do some major possibly reconstruction of the bodice, but it's possible to even fix something like that. But you certainly want to be trying on that dress, at least a week before your wedding, if not a little sooner, just to make sure that, you know, you're from your fitting to the time you're putting the dress on and the day of, the dress is fitting. So, yeah, really, that's a big one. But, you know, disasters happen. Like, they really do, and that's, you know, that's another thing. It's like you can have an amazing wedding planner. You can have a great team, a great crew, but, you know, it's real life. You know, things happen.
Now, is it really important, Anya, to have a wedding planner? Should every bride getting married have a wedding planner?
I think that there are certain people who probably really would do themselves well to get a wedding planner. Those are people who are, first of all, do not want to plan a wedding, but want to have one. Second of all, can afford it because it is an added cost. And third, don't have any time in the day. Just have a real high stress job. And then from there, those categories of people probably need to seek professional help immediately when they're going to plan a wedding. But then there's a lot of other people who really like the idea of taking it on and like the idea of planning their weddings from start to finish, and that's really cool. I think a lot of times what you find is will help is to hire at least a day of coordinator or a month of person to kind of help fill in all the gaps when you're planning along.
Now, that's a great idea. I never knew that. A day of or a month of, instead of having someone for the whole year, you can just have that person there on site for that particular day or a month prior.
Yep. And there are even some planners who will do what they're calling blueprint services. So in those cases, it's the beginning of planning your wedding. You have all these visions in your head, but you don't know how you're going to execute. And that type of planner might sit with you and put together a real plan for you, but then hand it back over to you so you can execute. And so then their services are also significantly less expensive.
That is amazing. I never thought of that. Because when you think of a wedding planner, you automatically think that person is going to be attached to the hip for about 7 months.
You think of Franck from Father and Bride,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Like, get away. Come on. I need to get the surgery. Yeah. Remove you from my hip. Oh, my God. Yeah. Get away from me. But, I guess you do need someone to keep you sane, though.
Yeah,
I've done many
that
of makeup jobs, and I tell you, the wedding planner was fabulous because she got everything flowing.
And there's just things that you won't know until you see it why they're so amazingly helpful. Even just having a third party person in the room, if you have a problem with, maybe bride and mom aren't getting along very well or something comes up, that third party person who's not a family member is great buffer for dramatic situations.
Oh yeah. And now another question I have, and I saw this again on your website. I never knew about this, wedding insurance.
Yes.
I didn't know it existed.
Yeah, it does exist, and you can get it. There's different ways to do it. You can, you can cover up to, it just depends on your budget, I suppose. And there's different levels as well, and depending on who you go through. But one of the things we like to tell brides to consider is if you live in an area that does tend to get hit by, say, hurricanes, or it's a beach wedding, or just any sort of, place that's real exposed to the elements, you might want to consider wedding insurance.
And what all does it actually cover when you get the insurance? If, say, for instance, there is a situation where
you wanted to have it outside, and
there's a hurricane.
Right. Some of them will cover up to, say you have a big budget, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and so you'll, it's similar to any other kind of insurance that if something like a natural disaster, it just all needs to be written into the policy when you're signing on it. But you certainly can find yourself insurance plans that will cover up to, $20,000, $30,000 of your wedding budget. So that in the case you needed to cancel or you needed to a storm hit and you needed to change the date, you wouldn't lose all that money in your deposits, because certainly without insurance, you at least will lose your deposits.
What about if the bride or the groom doesn't show up? Now, let me see.
I don't know about that in the insurance clause. I think you have to eat that money.
Can I get insurance for that if someone got cold feet?
I doubt that they'd be willing to write that in there, but you never know.
And how does someone go about finding the bridal insurance? Is it like do you just go you look on your computer and just Google it or something?
Yeah, you can Google it. There's Wedsurance. There's a number of different websites that do it. But yeah, I think a simple Google search would supply you with companies and such. And you might even ask your insurance provider now whether they do it. One of the bigger firms may as well. So.
And another question that someone sent me, they were asking about how what can I do? And I saw this on The Knot as well, about a videographer and a photographer. But what are some of the questions or what's some of the things that I need to look for if I am going to hire a videographer and I want it to look good? I want him to, make sure, I don't look like, America's Funniest Videos. I mean, what do I need to do when I want to hire a videographer?
Well, it's a good question. When you're doing research on, you're searching around websites and you're finding different videographers, which is, of course, probably where you start. You start doing an online search and you're reading reviews and things. Well, you want to look at their clips, and you want to not just, they'll give you their highlights, their best videos ever will be on their homepage, usually. But what you want to do is you want to dig a little deeper and you want to watch a lot of different examples. And you'll get a feel for what they like to do. Some videographers love slow, dramatic moments and they like to hold the shot there. Other videographers are real fast and snappy about it. It depends on your style. It's just like find a photographer. So if you like the modern, edgy thing, that's what you're going to be looking for. Also, look at the way they shoot and capture the brides, and see the way they look. Does he focus in on her face? Does she do a lot of pulled out shots? That's what you can expect to see in your own video. But certainly good to dig deep and to look at as many examples of their work as possible, because you'll start to see commonalities, and that's what you can expect to see in your video.
Yeah, because I guess, you would kind of need to see their style, see if it's, a vintage style. Is that even a style? Vintage versus Blair Witch Project?
Exactly. There's so many styles. I mean, it's just like weddings, you know? It's like they come in all shapes and sizes. So with videography and photography, too, it's, yeah, you've got vintage. You have real cinematic. You'll have some that try to do really interesting. Some will do crazy things like add in, like, music video, like, type clips. And it just depends on what you're looking for. But, yeah, I mean, once you start, you know, looking around and really getting a feel for what's out there, don't be fooled. Don't think that they're all the same, because they really are not. And it does take a little time, but once you kind of narrow in on what you like, the decision is pretty quick from there.
Oh, okay. Now, another question. Are rehearsal dinners necessary? Do we really have to have a rehearsal dinner? Can we just, like, you know, let's do the rehearsal. Okay, here's a box line. See you tomorrow.
There's no need for a rehearsal dinner. No, not necessarily. But you know, I think that they're a great way to get everyone together before the wedding day. And I think that's what it's all about, is because this is your opportunity. You're with the closest people that, you know, assuming you've chose them for your bridal party. And this is just an opportunity for you guys 2 days before the wedding or 1 day before the wedding to really, you know, to have some, like, real quality bonding time. And the reason why people are adding on all these parties now, people do welcome parties, they do brunches now, they do after parties. It's because they're trying to lengthen the time that they get to spend with all their friends and family. So in my mind, if you're asking everyone to fly in or come to your wedding, you might as well have a few extra little get-togethers on the side.
Yeah, until Uncle Sam gets drunk and passes out, and then, you know, everybody's like, oh, my God, okay, we can't invite him to another party.
That's true. You really get to know everyone at rehearsal
dinners.
But that's
a great idea. I love that, because that is an excellent opportunity to know everyone, especially when they're coming from out of town. You said something about a welcome party.
Yeah, so some people, well, so what a lot of times now, weddings being what they are, you know, people are flying in and spending the weekend together, and so they'll do a welcome party and maybe make the rehearsal dinner 2 nights before the wedding instead. So in which case, the welcome party could be anything. It could be, we're all going to meet at the park, and, you know, we're going to burn some burgers and drink some lemonade. Like, it could be that, or it could be something a little more, you know, put together, like, you know, tacos and margaritas, totally different. But it's kind of fun, because, you know, the idea is just to get everyone who's flying in and traveling in together 1 night before. And usually welcome parties are everyone who's invited to the wedding, who's in town, can come to that too. And it doesn't have to be expensive either. It could just be a hospitality suite in a hotel room. You know, you say, everyone just stop by. We want to welcome you here, and a quick toast to you for coming to my wedding. Like, it's just a nice, gracious kind of gesture. And again, it lengthens the amount of time that you get to spend with your friends and family.
And how does a person who has family, you brought up a really good point, a person who has family or friends coming in from out of town, how do they go about booking hotels and suites? Do they talk, who do they talk to as far as saying, you know, they want to book a rack of rooms or whatever, and how do they get the discount, or do they get a discount necessarily?
Yeah, it's really common for hotels to give you a discount if you're blocking off a group of rooms and in a hotel. And really, it's really standard. And so when you call a hotel, you would want to say, like, hi, I'm planning a wedding for this weekend, and I'm wanting to talk to somebody about booking a block of rooms. And usually you might talk to somebody maybe a little more specialized than the person who answers the phone, and they'll do it for you there. You just, a lot of times, you don't have to pay anything up front. You just say, you know, I'd like to reserve, say, 15 or 20 rooms. And a lot of times their rules will be something along the lines of, okay, like, you know, we'll put these on hold for you. We'll give your guests maybe a 15 or 10% discount on the rooms. And when they call, they just need to say, you know, what wedding they're staying, what wedding it is. And then a lot of times they'll release the rooms when it gets closer to the date, just in case if your guests haven't filled them all, then they'll want to fill them. And so you just kind of go back and forth like that. And it's actually, it's actually really, really standard. And hotels will kind of walk you through the process, usually, if you call and tell them what you're up to.
And you don't have to necessarily pay down on it. I guess you could just, because
right.
I'm thinking, what if someone doesn't show up and you've reserved 10 rooms and 7 people show up? What happens to the other 7? I mean, the
right.
other 3.
And some So sometimes sometimes they may not make you pay, but they'll make you, if you do not fill all the rooms, they'll say, well, there's an attrition fee, which that gets a little more complicated. But in those cases, it means that if you've guaranteed 10 rooms and only 8 of them get booked, you may be responsible for half of the price that went on, you know, bought or whatever it is. But a lot of places don't do that. That's pretty specific. A lot of places are very cool about, you know, blocking off rooms and then saying, okay, well, if your guests don't reserve those rooms by such and such date, we're going to release it, and then they'll just be on their own to try to find a room. So,
Okay, because, you know, that was something else that, you know, that was something that I wanted to know, because I think when I had to do that, I guess I did. I think my mom handled all that stuff. So it's nice to know. Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, I didn't think of that, but that's nice to know. And one last question, Anya, because, you know, I'm running out of time, and I got like 1,000 things, but I have to let you go. The bridal shower.
Yeah.
How crazy does it have to get?
It's hard with the bridal shower, because that's another one. That's an event that typically your bridesmaids are really involved in. They're also doing the bachelorette party. They're also buying their dresses, and so it can get, you know, it can start to feel like a big burden on those ones who are really close to you. So, as a bride, I think it's your responsibility to say it's really okay if it's something very, you know, laid back. I don't need an invitation with a butterfly that flies out of it. Like, I don't need, you know, just making your friends and family aware. I'm kidding, but I'm totally joking, but you know what I mean. So just saying, like, hey, it's, you know, it could be a potluck. Like, it could be anything. The idea of a bridal shower is to shower the bride with, you know, love and, you know, gifts and things. And so even a lot of people will do themed showers and things like that too, which it makes it easy to kind of pull all the details together. And it's fun because it's a way to highlight the bride and her personality and, pull in some details that are real specific to her. Maybe her wedding is going to look one way, but this is an opportunity to celebrate that other part of her and make it that kind of a theme. So, I think bridal showers are and often they're planned by a family member anyway. So usually the bridesmaids just need to show up.
Oh, my God. Anya Winokur, director of TheKnot.com, site director of TheKnot.com. Thank you so much for being on The Beauty Files. I really appreciate your input.
You got it. Thank you.
Oh, and coming up next, we have David Cooper. He is president of Jeff Cooper Designs. He'll be with us in about a minute. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back with our part two of the series, Help Me Plan My Wedding. Joining us right now, it's David Cooper of Jeff Cooper Designs. Welcome to the files, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Juanita. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. We were just talking with Anya from TheKnot.com. Gave us a lot of tips on planning the wedding, and you, my friend, are the guy of the bling.
Absolutely.
You are the bling factor.
The platinum. Yes,
and I saw a lot of your designs. They are spectacular designs for your rings. I love it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I put a lot of heart into those.
I can really tell that. I can tell that every piece, just from me looking at it, looks like you really put your heart and soul in every piece, and I respect that, and I love it. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Let me
get right to it. What are some of the do's and don'ts of picking a perfect ring?
Well, the reality of the situation for me, and the advice I give all of my friends, is that it doesn't really matter how much you spend, and this is an opportunity for you to really express an emotion through a piece of jewelry. So you got to put a lot of yourself into it. Don't get hung up on specifics. Pick a ring or a style that you feel really speaks to who you are, about your relationship, about your fiancé to be, or about your partner to be, and something that's special to you too. It's not a trendy purchase. This is something that every time you look down at that ring or your wedding bands, that you're going to be took back to that time when you proposed, or when he proposed to you, or when you said your vows. And it's a really important purchase. So don't get caught up in the minutiae of diamond grades and this and that. It's just go for what your gut tells you.
Oh, I just got chill bumps. I do, David. I do. No. Yes, thank you for asking. No, I just got chill bumps. That is so true. Because when you look at your ring, you want to remember exactly the moment that your guy or person proposed to you and asked you for your hand in marriage.
Exactly. There's so many things that in a relationship that you may buy your significant other that do not carry anywhere near the emotional impacted weight of this simple, well, expenses albeit, but simple purchase that it just communicates so much emotion, and it's just... It's all about that for me, and
wow. You
know, that's how I look at what I do, is that I'm communicating emotion. It's a moment in time, and it's special to every single person that buys it, and
that's
the core of it.
Oh, my God. So gemstones versus diamonds, do you have a preference, or do you like both?
Well, traditionally, it's always been diamond has been the preference,
right.
But after Will and Kate got engaged, it kind of brought color stones back into the picture. Years and years ago, when Ben Affleck and J-Lo got engaged, it kind of caused a brief craze with colored diamonds.
Right.
You know, for me, again, it really is what each couple wants. Traditionally, most people will go towards diamond, but in a beautiful sapphire or a ruby, you can get a big, bold look as well. It's truly up to personal preference.
I love that idea. And I love Kate's ring. It was beautiful.
It was. And but then again, that really does speak to emotion, because that ring relates back to Princess Diana's ring, I believe, as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, because it's a lot of emotion, and, you know, you really want to capture that. So I think it's great that they paid homage to that.
Oh, wow. And now, how does one pick a jeweler? I mean, because there's so many out there. Yeah, including yourself. I mean, I pick you. I mean, it's like I love what you just said about the ring. It's just I still have chill bumps. But does one pick a perfect jeweler?
Well, a lot of it has to do with comfort level with the individual. I would never really suggest buying a diamond online. That's just not something I would ever say to do.
Okay.
And the reason is because this is not a commodity. This is something that it has to, like, jump out of that paper or jump out of that showcase and say, this is the one. So the way to find a jeweler is to really shop around your local town. Or if you live in a major metro area, utilize sources like Yelp or any other reviews. If you find a designer such as myself or someone else that you like, go to our websites, and we will refer you to jewelers who we feel comfortable working with as our face to the public, and that you should feel comfortable, you know, working with as well. Just because, you know, your parents may have had a jeweler for many, many years, or, you know somebody through somebody, this is still your opportunity to do this. So shop around. You really want to get the most knowledge that you can get. And it's basically like finding a doctor. Not many men or women have purchased diamonds before in their past, so you have to establish that bond and trust the diamond or the prescription that they write you. So you really have to shop around. Don't settle, and sometimes the best deal is not always the best buy.
And that brings me to my next question. How much should a person spend on a diamond ring or an engagement ring?
What I always tell people is this. I said, it doesn't matter if you spend $500 or $500,000. The relationship will still be the same.
Yeah.
So it's really individual. I mean, some of the happiest people I know wear small stones and small rings, but they're important to them. And it's really whatever you feel comfortable with. Don't drive yourself into debt beyond belief, because beyond the engagement ring, you still have to purchase wedding bands, and then there's a wedding. So it's really your comfort level.
Should, this is a touchy question, should we, or you know, a consumer know anything or any information about conflict-free diamonds?
Well, the United Nations enacted, they pretty much went as hard as they could against stopping the flow of blood diamonds into the diamond supply. Many people are far too quick to associate blood diamonds with something like fur.
Right.
Not every diamond was a blood diamond.
Exactly.
And, you know, alongside the United Nations, the entire jewelry industry has bonded together to fight the spread of that, because the last thing we want to do is fund any conflict, fund any war, any bloodshed. It's just not good karma. So I know myself and any responsible supplier or responsible retailer will only purchase and sell fully documented stones. That means that from the moment they come out of the ground, that entire supply chain is controlled. At this point in time, to the best of my knowledge, you would really have to work very hard to find a conflict stone. We've really cleaned out the entire supply. And if it is such a tremendous issue where you don't necessarily have 100% faith, many diamonds are also sourced from Canada, and they're usually marketed under different Canadian names or trademarks, and those come directly from up north. So they're totally bypassing that situation entirely.
Now, is there a particular cut that that's one of your favorites? I like cushion.
Cushions are beautiful. Cushions are beautiful. For myself, you know, I've been involved in jewelry since I'm about 2 years old.
Oh,
I've grown up around. I've grown up around some of the most beautiful estate jewelry and historic pieces around. And for me, what really speaks to me is step cut diamonds. What that means is stones like Asher cuts and emerald cuts.
I love that too. I love emerald cuts.
I love exactly. Emerald cuts are just, they're gorgeous, because anything that is step cut, meaning the facets of the diamonds, the sides, the little, the edges, they run parallel, like, say, horizontal blinds.
Right.
Because of this, you can see right to the heart of the diamond. To me, it's honesty.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Understated elegance. And when I proposed to my now wife, her entire ring is made of step-cut diamonds. It had an Asher-cut center with baguettes and then square baguettes the entire way around the finger. Because I love what it stands for. It's just clean, understated, simple, and just it's just class.
That's where is your wife? Where is that ring? I'm gonna snatch it off her finger. That sounds amazing. Did you design that yourself for her? I'm sure you did.
It's actually an interesting story. I met my wife actually while I was at gemology school, learning to be a gemologist.
Mm-hmm.
And she was studying as well to get her degree in gemology. And she later went on to be the inventory manager for one of the largest diamond exporters in the world. So to buy a girl like that a diamond is quite an undertaking. And then to be a ring designer, to design a ring for a girl like that was even more challenging. It was about a year and a half process. And her rings, it's definitely the best thing I've ever created.
Amazing. It sounds, and I love baguettes, too. It sounds absolutely amazing.
It actually spawned a whole collection, which we designed based off of her ring.
Really?
Because I would never try to duplicate it, because she wouldn't be having that.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm not having that now. I mean, like,
yeah.
But you have
it's
a collection that's based on that.
So I themed a whole collection with baguettes and square-cut diamonds in that very simple, clean, proportionate Art Deco-inspired flow. And it's just, it's been great. But her ring is, you know, it's everything I wanted to say to her. And that's what it was.
Wow. Wow. How did you propose? You know, I'm getting off the site, but how did you propose to her?
Well, I proposed to her. Originally, what I was going to do was get a puppy and have, you know, put the ring around the puppy's neck. But I had found out about 2 weeks prior that the puppy we were waiting for was born with a heart murmur.
Oh.
So that it wasn't able. So I was able to actually find a small porcelain box in the shape of a bulldog, because we wanted to get a bulldog. So I put the ring in the bulldog box, and at this time we were living together in a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, and I was living rent-free because she owned it. But basically, you know, I was a nervous mess, and what I had done was she had a doorman at the building. So what I did was I went around the corner the day earlier. I had just gotten back from a business trip, and I met up a florist around the corner, and I said, tomorrow morning you're going to deliver 2 dozen roses in a beautiful vase. Do not put any name on the card. Just say, with love. And then I went back to my apartment building and told the doorman that they were going to be delivering roses to hold the roses, that we were going to order breakfast. So basically we woke up the next day, and my wife and I ordered breakfast from around the corner from the delicatessen. And so the food comes up in the elevator along with this giant bouquet of roses. I mean, this thing was massive. So I go and open the door. And I'm like, I turn to my wife, I'm like, did you order flowers? And she's like, no. I'm like, well, somebody just sent you 2 dozen roses, and I just got back from a business trip. This is freaking me out. So, you know, this is just my kind of twisted sense of humor. I like to play these type of games. And so in I walk with this massive bouquet, and I'm a very big guy, and you could not see me behind this. I put it on the table, and I'm like, where's the card? So she goes and grabs the card. She's like, it says with love, and she has no idea what's going on, genuinely was like a little freaked out.
Right.
And so I kind of worked out that angle as long as I could, and I'm like, please, you know, come here, sit down. And at this point, I mean, we're still in sweatpants and glasses and, you know, just right out of bed. And I sat her down on the couch. I got down on one knee.
And I said,
you know, since I was able to get you the bulldog you wanted, I got you a bulldog of a different kind. And I brought out the little porcelain box, opened it up, and asked her to marry me.
That is so sweet. What a great story.
It was pretty awesome. And obviously she said yes.
Yes.
We've been married. It'll be 9 years this May.
That is fantastic. I love story.
It totally took it by surprise. And this was actually the week before Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow.
I totally knew it would catch her off guard.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
And it worked out great. And breakfast was we ordered bagels with the intention, knowing that I would propose and that it would be like she would be crying so that her breakfast wouldn't get cold. And it worked out very well.
Were you nervous?
I think I slept maybe 20 seconds the night before.
And then you're like, I got this.
You know, when it happened, it all fell into place. It was right, and we dated for a long time, but it was perfect. Everything happened. So.
Oh wow, Dave, if
anything, I'm the lucky one. So.
Yeah. I love stories like that, and I'm a little like whooshy now, but let me get back to my show. So any advice? I love that story. Any advice you can give our listeners about what they should start doing now if they want to, you know, plan on, you know, buying the ring or whatever?
Well, the most important thing in speaking directly to all the women out there, girlfriends, is that your boyfriend probably needs some help. And he would like to kind of have an idea for what type of style or what type of direction or what type of look. Now, you have to be careful how you approach this with them as to not drive it into a pressure situation, but dropping subtle hints about, oh, you know what, I really love this ring, or as you're walking through the mall, casually push him off into a jewelry store to kind of look at stuff. Give him an idea of what direction to go in.
You don't want to intimidate him in thinking that, you know, every time you pass a jewelry store, you just throw him in the jewelry store. Hey, look at that right there.
You know, it's like you can. There are ways to set him up, or through a friend of yours, find ways to communicate to him just the type of look that you want. For the fellas out there, this is your moment to be a superstar and to be a superhero. You know, and to just really wow your girlfriend and fiance to be. So take it seriously. Don't go in, you know, to a jeweler thinking that this is just any old purchase. Like I said, this is you.
Yeah.
So put yourself into it. Take your time. Do not rush. And also understand everything that you're buying. Take the time to learn, because this jeweler that you're purchasing from, you're going to be involved with, because you're still going to want to buy matching wedding bands.
And that's what I was going to ask you, the next question. Should they get a matching? Should the band always be matching, or can you just get, like, something that you like?
You know, there's all different ways to do this. Like, in my collection, when I design an engagement ring, I always design a band to match with it.
Okay.
Some people like to wear them together. Some people wear them on separate hands. Some people like to buy wedding bands that might have nothing to do at all with their engagement ring, or something that was maybe handed down from their family.
Okay.
In terms of the men's band, it really upsets me when men go and buy these really inexpensive alternative metals like tungsten and tungsten, titanium, or cobalt. This is your wedding. This is symbolic of the union with your wife or your significant other. Buy something precious. Don't buy something cheap. Because a lot of these guys will go out and, say, buy a $200 wedding band, but they'll turn around and spend $3,000 on rims and tires for their car.
Exactly.
I mean, you see my logic here. So, you know, I know for myself that I wanted to wear a band that I was proud to wear, that I enjoyed wearing, that I was excited to wear. And, you know, I love my wedding band, not just because I love the style and I love wearing it and the look of it, but because I'm proud of my wedding. I'm proud of my marriage. I'm proud of my relationship, and it's a symbol of that.
Oh, David, I can talk with you like all day. You are true. Your wife is truly lucky. I find you totally dreamy. Thank you so much
Thank
for being
you.
On the show to talk about how to pick the perfect ring. And guys,
thank you for having me.
He gave the best advice. You know, pick from your heart. I can just throw that out there, and I'm not trying to hint. No, I'm not hitting, but pick from your heart. I think that was the best advice you could give. David Cooper from Jeff Cooper Designs, thank you so much for being on the Beauty Files.
Thank you. Have an awesome weekend.
You too. Coming up next, we're going to talk about what you can do prior to your wedding, what type of injectables or Botox-related treatments that you can get done prior to you getting married. Give me about a minute. We'll be right back with Kelly Sullivan from Nivica MedSpa. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Beauty Files. I got blown away with David. I got blown away. I'm sorry. He took me on the magic carpet ride call. Oh, my gosh. You're so good. So, yeah, let me get myself back together here. Kelly Sullivan from Nivica MedSpa. Kelly, welcome to the Beauty Files.
Hi, Juanita. How are you?
I'm great. You've been with us before, and you gave us some excellent advice on different injectables and great things that we can get our bodies ready for, whatever. But now we're talking about weddings. I need to know, I'm going to give you a timeline, and you can tell me exactly what a girl or a guy can get done prior to getting married. So 6 weeks before the wedding, what possibly could we get done to prepare us for our wedding day, 6 weeks before our wedding?
You know, it really depends on what it is that they're looking to achieve. 6 weeks gives you plenty of time to do some chemical peels that will actually start to turn over the skin of the face, which will make the dead cell layer a little thinner. That, in turn, will make the skin healthier and brighter and clearer. Their makeup will go on much better. Typically, we will do one treatment of those every couple of weeks. Considering that we're within a six-week time frame, we may not get a full series in, which is what we would really want for you know, total skin turnover.
Right.
But we can do enough, even if we're doing two of them at a two-week interval, you'll see a benefit of the skin, and the skin will just, it'll just look much better. It'll look much healthier. Like I said, the makeup goes on much nicer. If they're looking to have some fillers or some Botox, if they're looking for more of a type of a treatment, 6 weeks prior, absolutely, either one of those things can be done. I will say that typically, though, if someone has not done it prior to that and they're jumping right in to do it and they have a wedding coming up, you get into, you don't want to be too aggressive with them. You want to improve but not try to completely fix or repair, because you don't want a person to feel overwhelmed that they did too much.
Right.
You know, they have a lot of things going on during that time frame and a lot of stress already.
Right.
The last thing you want to do is give them Botox and all of a sudden their face totally, you know, they're not able to make any kind of movement in their forehead lines or anything, and that kind of, you know, shocks them a little bit.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, if I can't smile for a picture, I mean, that would be kind of a that would be
yeah,
a bad
that could be
thing.
Absolutely, that could be a problem. So, you know, sometimes I'm kind of, it just really depends on the person. But if it's their first time and they're thinking, oh, I'm going to do all this stuff and everything's going to be perfect, you know, it's just a matter of taking them down a notch and being realistic with them and saying, you know, let's see if we can improve stuff, but let's not go for that 100-mile dash, because if we do go that way, yeah, you might be totally happy with it, but on the other end, you might think, oh, I've overdone it, and you don't want to have that. You want it to be natural. Fillers, definitely would say 6 weeks prior is a good amount of time. Again, I wouldn't, just speaking from a common sense factor, if you're a person who has small lips and you've always had that and you've decided now you want these big overfilled lips,
right?
I don't think now's the time to do it, because
so 6 weeks prior would not be a good time to try to have fuller lips for my wedding day.
Only because it is okay if you want to do some to improve,
right?
But if that person's looking for a very drastic, it's not for that. But to do things
okay.
to improve, absolutely,
yeah.
Because you don't want to look totally different. You don't want to
right.
look at your pictures, you know, a year from now and think, what was I thinking? So you want to make sure that when you go to someone that they're looking at your face and they're looking at what can be done in a more natural approach versus just doing it to look like a picture might look.
Okay.
So that's real important. Doing it 6 weeks prior too for, like, fillers around the lines on the face, perfect time, because if you do get a bruise, which we can't predict who will or won't get a bruise, because it is injectables. But if you do, 6 weeks leaves plenty of time for that to
wow.
totally be gone.
So your suggestion is that you basically, if you're going to, you know, dip into the pool of injectables, that you should definitely think about doing it probably maybe 2 months prior as opposed to 2 weeks prior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would... You know, 2 weeks prior, if you think about bruising, if someone, I can give 100 injections a day and have one person bruise. But if that one person gets a very substantial bruise, it is going to take about 4 weeks to totally be completely gone. So that's a real important factor to think about. So you don't want to go and have something done like that you have to worry about your pictures.
Right.
Again, I think the main point is to go somewhere where you trust the person who's doing it. They have enough experience to look at you and say, this is an improvement, versus going somewhere that you don't know about and somebody just wants to put a lot of stuff in you.
Yeah. Now, what about men? I mean,
because
men, you know, guys, I know you guys are doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What about them?
What
can they do before the big day?
Absolutely, the same exact thing. If you know, if they want to do a little filler because maybe their lines are a little deeper and they want to fill
right.
that up,
right.
Botox, we do a lot of Botox for men, especially, you know, the same thing, the 11s in between the eyebrows,
right.
and it just will soften their look. You know, again, go to someone who is comfortable enough with doing it to a point that you improve your looks without making you look very different that's going to make you uncomfortable. You know, it's sometimes less is more, I guess, what the saying
is.
And to make sure that you're doing it in such a way that you're not drastically changing your overall look.
Now, you mentioned chemical pills. If a person got a scenario, if a person got a chemical pill and they wanted, you know, and they wanted to look fabulous for their wedding day or whatever, is there a certain rule? I'm just totally out the box here, but is there a certain rule, like if I get a chemical pill, I'm not allowed to maybe get into a pool, maybe experience chlorine? I'm just thinking out of the box right now.
Yeah, no. With the chemical peels, there's all different ones. You know, they vary from a very light exfoliation to a more aggressive medium depth where you're really, you know, taking off several layers of that dead skin cell.
Right.
Of course, with whatever it is that you're doing, you want to be careful afterwards, but there is no, with most of the chemical peels, you're doing layered amounts more frequently versus one big deep amount one time. So
right.
in doing that, you're stimulating the skin to react to the chemical peel as well to rebuild the skin texture and the tone and just help everything. Of course, you have to wear sunscreen. That's very, very important because if we're taking down the dead cell layer, we're losing some of that natural protection that's there from that thickened cell layer.
Yeah.
So it is important to wear sunscreen. But with most of the peels, they can go about their business as normal. Usually, I'll ask that they not exercise for the first 24 hours or sweat or, you know, swimming. If you don't want to go swimming that night, of course, don't do that. But long term, they pretty much can do their activity.
What about hair removal?
Hair removal is always a great one. Now, the one thing is, though, you're not going to start 6 weeks before an event and have total hair removal at the by the event. So with hair removal, it's something that's a longer process.
Really?
When you're looking at hair and laser, laser is picking up a dark hair, and it's burning the actual hair, causing the heat to go to the follicle, burn it so it doesn't make a new hair.
Okay.
We have various levels of growth at all times in our skin, and it rotates through. So only at any given treatment are you treating a percentage of hairs. With that being said, you have to do multiple treatments at multiple week intervals to get the end result that you're looking for. So in a 4 to 6 week, you would do a treatment every 4 to 6 weeks to get active growing hairs and to get the majority of them. So you're looking at several treatments for that.
Oh, wow. I assume because it was laser that you, but that's a good point that you need more than one treatment and, you know, to get the full effect.
Exactly.
Because if you try to get that done, like what you said, you should not get it 6 weeks prior.
You can do a treatment 6 weeks prior, but you're not going to be totally without hair if you're doing one treatment 6 weeks prior. You know, it can make it a little less, it can make it a little slower, but you're not going to have total hair resolution after one treatment. The one thing that we do offer, and I know that we had talked a little bit about this before, too, is the vaser shape, though.
I was just about to ask you that, the vaser shape.
Yeah, that is something that you can do prior to, and what I think it's probably best for is that bride who has that last little bit of something that she has to lose to be perfect in that dress. Vaser shape is actually using ultrasound and massage to put heat into the fat cells, and then they actually leak. And then you use a zonal massage, which helps it to go to the lymphatics and be drained. So it's perfect for that toning and looking to lose that last inch or so and just kind of making the skin feel a little bit better.
And how many treatments would a person need to do for that?
I was going to say, typically one, you'll see some improvement, but doing a series of 3 to 5, you'll see the best improvement. And those can be done actually every week. So you can do, and there is no, it doesn't change the skin. It doesn't change the appearance of the skin or the texture of the skin. So you could even do that even the day before you have your wedding.
Now, Kelly, before I let you go, I want you to tell everyone about your special. You do have a special going on, and I think it ends March 31st.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely tell people about that because we like specials.
Absolutely. So what we've done is we put together a whole day of beauty, kind of focusing on Valentine's Day and focusing on showcasing a couple of different things. So for someone who wanted to try maybe the Vaser or maybe wanted to have some Juvederm, we've booked it together, and it comes with a vaser-shaped treatment of any one area that they would like, a syringe of Juvederm filler, again, in any area that they would like or that we feel that they need, and a chemical peel. And then along with that, you'll get a PCA peptide lip therapy, which helps to, it's just a very great lip moisturizer, antioxidant. And the total for that is $720.
Wow.
So it's over a $200 savings. And considering that Juvederm, you know, can cost more than $500 usually for a tube, it's a pretty good special that we're running right now.
That is amazing. And how can one get an appointment to get that particular package?
They can just call Nivica Med Spa directly, and I have that phone number. The other thing I wanted to say, Juanita, too, that I didn't talk about with the Juvederm is Allergan has come up with a really great app. So if anybody wanted to see how they would look with Juvederm in their face,
wow,
you go on to Juvederm XC Treatment Visualizer app, and it's for your iPhone or iPad, of course.
Okay.
And then you can take your photo, and then it will show you what your lines will look like if you have one, two, or three syringes of Juvederm.
Now, that's Juvederm. How do you get the app again? Because, I'm going to put that on my site. How do you get that app?
Juvederm XC.
Juvederm XC. X as in X-ray and P.
X, C as in cat.
Okay.
Treatment visualizer.
Treatment visualizer. Wow.
That's
a
really
idea.
Cool, fun little thing. Yeah, that's a great, fun little thing to look at. And they'll even do a side-by-side comparison. So, you know, just kind of give somebody an idea if they're interested but they're not sure, just to see what they would look like.
Yeah, and people don't get that app and take a picture, see what it looks like, and then send it on Match.com because, you know, that's a fake.
That's a great idea. That is a very good idea. That's for another show, though, right?
I know, right? That's another show. And, Kelly, I'm going to have you on again to talk about some other stuff, too, because we're running out of time. But I want you to give our audience the phone number once again so they can get the special.
Okay, it's Nivica Med Spa, and it's 301-345-5828. And then if they mention that it's from your show that they heard us, we'll even do a second chemical peel for them to include it in that actual package. That's something special for them.
I like that. Again, say that number one more time. Nivica Med Spa. They're located at 7300 Hanover Drive in Greenbelt, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And the number again, Kelly?
301-345-5828.
Kelly Sullivan from Nivica Med Spa, thank you so much for being on the files. And people, if you're planning to get married, you need to get that package, especially the one with the, am I pronouncing this right, visor or vessor?
Vaser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, because you can look fabulous in your wedding gown for your wedding night, and no one would be the wiser.
Kelly, thank you
so much for being on the Beauty Files. I really appreciate it. And if you don't mind, we would love to have you back on again in about a month to talk about some other stuff.
Absolutely. It was great to talk to you again.
Oh, great to talk to you. And those of you who have been listening, I thank you for listening to the show. That was our part two of Can You Help Me Plan Our Wedding? Wasn't David dreamy? And Anya, wasn't Anya fabulous? I love the whole show, and I hope you did too, and thank you for joining. Join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about amazing vacation spots that you definitely need to take, and you probably want to go to as soon as I finish talking about it. But until then, you take care, and thanks for listening to The Files. Bye-bye.